Hello there. Welcome back to Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And today, we are here with the first episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy, season 16 and a half, is what we are here with. 16 and a half. You may recall earlier season, let me check exactly what season, I think it was 12 and a half we did Visions. No, 12 and a half was TOTJ. 12 and a half was TOTJ, I think. Let's check. Yeah, no. Visions was 10 and a half. Visions season 1 was 10 and a half. All the Visions season 1 episodes that took place up to the point was season 10 and a half. We are now at season 16 and a half. And since last time in 2023, some new Visions episodes have released. Visions this next season went international, not only Japan from the first one, but I know Ao's song is from the South African studio Triggerfish. Sith is Spanish. Screecher's Reach is Irish. And I believe Journey to the Darkhead is South Korean based. So we have all these great different cultures. I think, no offense to Vision Season 1, I thought it was great. But I thought that this was a really interesting idea to make this international, to look at all cultures and see how all of them interpret the Star Wars myth.
Yeah, I think, it's not to say, this Spanish studio is representative of all of Spain, but it is cool to see historically, Star Wars has been pretty entrenched, obviously, in American and just the Anglophone world of TV and movie production. So it's interesting to see some other takes on it from other countries, even though the dialogue in all these is in English, or at least the ones that we've seen today, and as far as I'm aware, the other ones.
Yeah, the other ones are, of course, are in English, though I believe there are dubs in other languages for all of them. I know the first season was dubbed, had a Japanese dub. I know that for a fact. But we already alluded to it. Ao's song, Sith, Journey to the Darkhead, Screecher's Reach. I'll explain the order later, but first, let's do our summaries.
All right, let's do it, yeah. In Ao's song, we open on the planet Korba. The residents have cultivated their kyber crystals for generations until the Sith came and poisoned them. Since then, they have been working to purify the crystals. A little girl named Ao has a singing voice that is sequestered away by her father, Abbot, due to the intense effect it has on these kyber crystals. A Jedi named Kratu visits in an attempt to understand why the kyber crystals have not been able to purify. When Ao's singing causes one of the crystals to sting her father, he scolds her and tells her to not sing again. They head into town for work, but Abbot goes to the mines with assistant Atu, while Ao tends to the animals. However, she hears a voice calling out to her, and she sees her father outside the mines with Atu preparing to go down. Ao is suddenly drawn by another entrance that takes her to a large cavern with red kyber crystals. She starts singing, with her voice having a huge effect on the crystals. However, Abbot finds Ao, causing the crystals to disrupt, and he pulls her out just in time as the rock spire begins to shake, crumble, and collapse. Ao and Abbot, they're caught in the collapse, and they almost fall to their deaths, but they're rescued by Kratu, who uses the Force to stop them from being crushed. Ao, now realizing what she must do, she sings a powerful song to calm and purify the crystals, and the Jedi Kratu is very impressed and tells Ao that due to her ability, she must come with her, but she gives her some time to think about it. The next day, Ao has decided to leave with Kratu, with Abbot telling her that she is the first of their kind to leave and enter the wider galaxy, and the two of them hug as Ao leaves with Kratu on her next adventure. So second off, we have Lola, a former Sith apprentice who lives alone with her droid E2 in an abandoned base on an isolated planet. The structure is represented by a mostly clean white facility with some color splashed about. We'll get to this. It's a very interesting art style. Lola tries to make a painting, but she can't seem to remove darker portions from it. After getting a message of a damaged satellite nearby, she and her droid E2 go to check on it, only to run into her former Sith master, Lord Kutu, and two killer droids. The master insists that it broke her promise to him, and he chases her all the way back to her base. Lola manages to kill one of the droids, E2 kills the other droid, but the Sith Master arrives and destroys E2. Lola returns into the facility, which has changed and is now completely dark and shadowy, and she grabs her lightsaber, and she fights the Sith Lord with her yellow lightsaber. The Sith Master saying to Lola, it's her destiny to become the new Sith Master, and Lola saying that she is no Sith. However, Lola, in order to defeat her old master, she ignites the second half of her lightsaber with a red blade, as opposed to her standard yellow blade, and slashes through her master. The Sith Master begins disintegrating into dust, but tells Lola that she has done well and will become the new Sith Master. However, Lola rejects this, saying that she is choosing her own path. And after that, Lola rebuilds E2, and they leave the planet, knowing that more Sith will come after her.
In Journey to the Dark Head, on the planet of Dol Guarak, the culture there interprets seemingly messages, prophetic messages, from rain falling from their giant statues onto stones. A young girl named Ara interprets one of these as a clash between two figures with a third in the middle. She is in a lot of distress because the Jedi and Republic are in a war with the Sith, and they're losing. And she has this idea, because the aforementioned statues represent the light and the dark side, she goes to the Jedi Council and requests their assistance to cut off the head of the dark side statue and turn the tide of the war in the light's favor. The Jedi send a reckless young Padawan, Tol, who's been having these visions of him fighting and losing his way, to a Sith Lord named Bichon. Ara and Tol's relationship doesn't get off to a great start, but they manage to approach the statues, at which point they are shot down by Bichon in his ship, engages Tol, while Ara goes to cut off the head of the Darkseid statue. In the middle of it, she realizes that she can't do that because both statues have light and dark in them. And quickly the vision becomes true, with Tol and Bichon fighting, and Ara herself as the third figure in the middle. Tol manages to embrace his destiny as a Jedi and not let anger control him, to defeat Bichon before falling off the platform where the statues are, only being rescued by Ara grabbing onto him with a parachute. The two resolve to go on more adventures together afterwards. And finally, in Screecher's Reach, on an unidentified planet, laborers work in this factory in seemingly very bad conditions. A few young teenagers. One of them is named Dahl. The other ones are Kena, Bathan, and Quinn. Decide to escape the factory and go to an infamous cave on the planet called Screecher's Reach. Dahl desperately, more than anything, wants to get off of the planet in search of a better life. Bathon, Quinn, and Kena encourage her, but they're not looking for the same thing. But Dahl basically dares them to go inside of Screecher's Reach, where seemingly wearing this necklace around her that is terrifying and will scare you through your mind. The others get trapped outside the cave, but when Dahl encounters the ghost, so leaving Dahl alone in there with the ghost. Dahl fights the ghost off, and it is revealed that the ghost is not really a ghost. It's an old woman who seemingly had some connection to the Sith, and who Dahl manages to, through luck, crush with a falling rock. Then Dahl meets her friends outside, and it's revealed that this necklace isn't just any regular necklace. It's an amulet, and she's being contacted by a mysterious woman who arrives in the ship, and is, of course, then revealed that this woman is not just anybody, but she is a Sith. She is known as the Sith Mother. She escorts Dahl off from her friends to go fulfill her destiny of becoming a fearsome Sith Lord. four shorts, four, we got four stories, great stories to talk about today. So with each one of these, I'm going to explain the reason why I put these where I put these.
Because these are not, this is not the order at all that they were aired in. This is that they show up on Disney Plus or wherever you're watching this.
Owl Song is the last episode of the season. Sith is first. Screech Reach is second. I believe Journey to Dark Head is like fourth or fifth in the season. So I'll explain this. So let's get to Owl Song first, which really, to me, is the most flexible of all of these things. But I think it takes place thousands of years before the Skywalker saga, just because I checked with Wikipedia, and they made a bunch of rationalizations around this. Wikipedia said...
Interesting.
That this one has to take place, of course, because the Jedi are around, before 19 BBY, yeah. Which makes sense. I actually think it takes place thousands of years before.
Makes sense.
Just because I do. I can't exactly explain it, but we don't see as much technology. We don't see as much... Like, the technology isn't as advanced. Maybe that's just the planet. And the Jedi Order doesn't feel like, what's her name, Kratu, doesn't feel like a Jedi of the prequel era. She feels like a Jedi maybe of, like, I would even go older than the High Republic. I'd go the Old Republic.
I think her clothing, the symbolism of her clothing was very interesting in this regard. It did remind me much more of the High Republic than it did of the Jedi of the prequel era.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Look at, she had that hat, you know. Yeah. Her outfit, it was a little, it had more pizzazz, it had more color.
And
you know,
ultimately,
it really
by the
wasn't
way,
like
these
brown paper bag
the timeline of these,
type of look.
The timeline of these ultimately does not matter. These are not canon.
They're not canon. They're non-canon. And completely
non-canon.
The only
reason we're treating them as such is because we're watching them on this show. That's the only reason. But
exactly.
Owl Song, I will be completely transparent with you. Jacob, this is your first time watching all these, right?
I had watched Sith before. I had not seen any of the others before. So my first time for three of these.
I'm the opposite. I watched all of these when they came out, except for once I got to Owl Song, I was worn out by watching all of them in a row. That I barely remembered anything from Owl Song.
Wait, did you sit down and binge these all at once?
No, I don't think so. I think Not in one sitting. I think I did four in the morning or something like that. And four later that day or something like that. But I legitimately did not remember a single thing about Owl Song. I put at the bottom of my rankings of the Visions episode just simply because I did not remember a thing that happened in this episode. So this was like watching it for the first time for me. And I was pleasantly surprised. I was pleasantly surprised by this one. And it's been a while since we've been able to talk about this. We have a crawl for Owl Song that I thought was...
Well
done.
We have a little crawl.
The world of Korba was once rich with force-attuned kyber, the crystal at the heart of the Jedi lightsaber. The kyber's power was praised throughout the stars until an ancient order of the Sith poisoned it, leaving it corrupted with the blood-red glow of the dark side. Over generations, Korba's people learned how to mine the corrupted kyber for the Jedi, who, through painstaking effort, could restore the crystals to their natural, harmonious state. I love that they're leaning into the purification of lightsaber crystals. This is something that has been established in canon. I'm sure Charles Soule lost his mind when he saw this, because he is, to my knowledge, the person who figured that up. Who made that up. Who made that for Star Wars. And I think it's a wonderful addition to the canon and what the emotionality of the lightsaber crystals mean. I think it follows George and Dave's and all the original people who made Star Wars what we know and love. I think it followed their goals perfectly. I think it followed their ideas perfectly. And I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as well, because in the old expanded universe, we had the synthetic crystals.
Yeah.
But then to my knowledge, I can't. Maybe it was Corrin Horn. I think, but there were instances of Jedi through meditation de-corrupting or purifying, in a sense, the synthetic red crystals. So it's interesting to see that brought back as well, because I'm not sure we've seen. Maybe I'm not sure exactly. Maybe it's how Ahsoka got her white blades. I can't remember exactly.
It's
but to my knowledge, we haven't seen the purification. We've seen the bleeding of the crystals before. So now it's interesting that here we see it all. Yeah. We see it all brought together.
Yeah. We haven't seen on screen that Ahsoka does that, but we know that she did do that.
Is it in Ahsoka the novel, possibly?
How she gets the lightsabers that she purifies is in Ahsoka the novel. I don't think she actually does it in the book, but it's implied.
Yeah, so it's heavily implied,
But yeah, Aosong, what I loved about this, and I'm going to say this about all four shorts, because it's true. Because Star Wars Visions, I do believe, is some of the best visual, pun not intended, includes some of the best visuals in Star Wars. I genuinely think there's some just beautiful places of art in here.
Yeah, some of this was just bumps. Absolutely.
Just looks so good.
All four of these had their moments.
And I'm not saying that the stories were lacking in any way, because they weren't. Aosong actually is the story that I'm the most mixed on. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. But there's just like a... It's just so beautiful visually. The audio engineering is also fantastic.
Yeah, they do some really cool things in this episode, especially. I agree.
I don't know if they took this intentionally from the High Republic, but like this idea of everybody having a different way they view the Force, and I was, of course, being a song, very much like Jedi Master Avar Chris in the High Republic. I run my notes.
I
would be best friends with Avar Chris.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting as well. I think tell me if you feel the same way, Eli. I felt like these episodes, breaking them down, felt a little bit difficult because, like you said, story-wise, these feel almost more like showcases than they do like stories at times.
I think the first half, Aosong and Sith, you can definitely say that more about. I think the end of the story of Screech's Reach and the entire story of Dark Head, I think there's some real meat on the bones there. Not to say that there isn't in the other ones, but they're not just like, you could call Aosong and Sith to a certain extent tone poems, and you wouldn't be completely wrong. But Journey to Dark Head felt like an addition to the mythology of Star Wars in a very real way that the other three didn't quite for me. And we'll get there when we get there.
But, yeah, I can see where you're going with that.
But no, but it's, there's just, this one's just so beautiful. Korva is just so beautiful, and I love...
The animation style... Yeah. Sorry, go
ahead. I just love the animations of, you know, the cave and the crystals in the cave and the planet just in general is just... It just looks really great, and we have those at the same time. I know I just called it a tone poem in some respect, and I still will maintain that it has some elements to that, but we have that relationship between father and daughter, which is an extremely Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
All of these, by the way, but Aosong, I think, does the least with it, which, again, I'm not saying I hate it, but I think it does the least with this. It has the least amount of Star Wars-y ideas in there in terms of themes. The other three hit the nail squarely on the head of what Star Wars is thematically.
I don't know if I fully agree with that. I think... Obviously, this isn't the most heavy-hitting story in the world. However, I think that there's absolutely a very Star Wars-y message in terms of embracing your gift and taking pride in it.
Oh yeah, I'm not trying to say that this one didn't have a Star Wars message.
Struggles with.
I'm not saying that this one didn't have a Star Wars message in it. I'm saying that I felt like the other three kind of leaned into it a little bit more. I don't mean to diss this one so hard. It is my least favorite of these four. It is my least favorite. I still very much like it. I think I can say I like all the Vision shorts except for Akikiri, which I have some structural problems with that we discussed previously. I know a lot of people have problems with the twins. I love the twins, but we'll get to that when we get to that. But one of the things that struck me specifically about it was like very much this was such a peaceful short for most of it. I remember taking the note. I'm like, I'm halfway in. And nothing has really happened. And that's not a diss on this. That's just me stating, like, I was told not to use her gifts, and then almost fell off a cliff, but didn't. nothing really dangerous happened to anybody.
Yeah, I like it when there doesn't necessarily have to be a villain.
Yeah, no, there was not a villain. There wasn't high stakes. It was just this girl discovering her connection to the Force. And I love that catharsis of her purifying the crystal. The idea of oh, nobody could do this. Like, no Jedi knew or I thought could do this.
Yeah.
But this little girl did it. And I'll plug a friend here. If y'all haven't, I highly encourage everybody to check this video out. I'm floored by this video. Friend of the show, friend of mine, one of the best people in the Star Wars fandom, Mr. Scotty Jaro, posted a 2-hour-long video essay about midichlorians and their thematic importance in Star Wars.
It is breathtakingly good.
It is breathtakingly good. It is a love letter to Star Wars, the prequels, midichlorians, what have you. It's chock full of both scientific and mythological analysis, which I think he balances so well. I've spoken about it. A lot of my friends have spoken about it. Everybody fucking loves it. And they should, because it's really good. And I was thinking back to Scotty's essay with this, because very much I like a lot of the ideas that George and others like him, like Dave and like Mick Nivitz and Jay and Ryan and Corbett and all the people who've been extending George's vision Star Force, where, yeah, the midichlorians are important. They are what the Force gets channeled through. But midichlorians, of course, aren't everything. And what's more is it's about belief. Like, as Yoda says, size means nothing. You know how I would purify that crystal? She just did.
Not through size, that's for sure.
She just did. She acted on instinct. She trusted herself. She reached into the power of the Force, and she did. And when you overanalyze, when you get too analytical about this stuff, when you start to doubt yourself, when you're not in a balanced state, the Force is not going to work as well for you.
Yeah, it's when she acts on instinct, we see her kind of have this moment, non-verbally, with her dad, when they're under Kratu's protection, and she's holding up the rocks with the Force, and their back's up against the wall, and she has this moment of just, Dad, I'm sorry, I gotta do this. And they have that little unspoken exchange, and it's so cool.
Yeah.
To see, you know, when she embraces it. It's wonderful. And then visually, the payoff is just spectacular. I think that's something that's wonderful about Visions is the amount of flexibility that these studios have visually to do whatever they want.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we're not tied down by the rules of canon or continuity or anything like that. And this is just gorgeous. When we see the entire mountain disappears, becomes transparent to show us how she's connecting to all the kyber crystals. That moment still stuck
in
my
head.
And
by the way, you know I love my canon, you know I love my connections, but let's be real for a second. That's how this fucking should be. We as fans should bend to the creators and their ideas and their story ideas. They should not bend to canon.
I'm not going to comment on
that.
I'm
not going to say that they should just completely disregard canon or anything. I'm just saying I think the onus is on us to make it work.
I think that this is the place where that's possible. I think that this is the place where the onus is not on the creators. This is where Pablo Hidalgo gets to go fishing. And I think that's the beauty of it.
But anyway, do you have any other thoughts about Aowu's song, or should we proceed to Sith?
No, I thought the animation style was very interesting, that you had these big, maybe, I can't tell if they were, I don't know the exact process, but they had these big kind of hand-drawn, painting-feeling tableaus, but then you combine that with these very textured, felty characters with their stop-motion-y movements. It was a very unique animation style. I'd never really seen anything like it before, so shout out to Triggerfish for putting this together. It was very cool. Yeah. I'm ready to go to the next one.
Let's go to Sith.
Let's get on.
Yeah, absolutely. Sith.
Yes.
Wow, is this beautiful.
Maybe the most out there, artistically, of any of the shorts today. I think the blending of the paint into the action is really neat. You know, it almost, it's surrealist a little bit. It blends, it makes you question what is real and what is representative for us, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, it, you make a good point. Specifically, I just wanted to talk to you very quickly about why this is where it is. When I originally watched this, when I sat down to watch this, I'm like, okay, this is Rule of Two era Sith. This is probably like 500, 600 BBY.
Yeah.
Now I no longer think so.
Makes sense.
Now I no longer think so. Wikipedia has this by 1032 BBY, which is the beginning, which is the end of the Jedi Sith War. I think it's probably earlier. I think it's probably 1500, 2000 years before. And the only reason I think that,
wow,
the only reason I think that is, if this was in the Rule of Two era, Lola, of course, kills her master at the end. And unless there was some other apprentice out there waiting, that would be the end of the Sith, if it was Rule of Two. But if there were many Sith out there, if there were an actual order, then one master's death would not mean the end of the Sith.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually.
I think that's the only thing that leaves me off of that makes me think it might take place closer-ish to the main Skywalker saga is what Lola escapes on.
And what was the ship in particular? I don't remember.
It's not the ship, it's the vehicle, it's the wheel bike.
Oh.
It looks very similar to the bike Grievous uses in Sith. I don't think it is. But
I mean, to be fair, we don't know how long that technology has been around.
Oh, of course we don't.
Star Wars.
And again, I might be nitpicking.
It's something.
But it's Sith. I think actually the matches pretty thematically well with Journey to the Dark Head, which we'll get to later. But all this stuff about Lola trying to paint with the other colors, but the black of the dark side, like, always seeping in. And she says, at the beginning, it's like darkness wants to be a part of the painting. And that is the thesis statement of the episode. Darkness needs to be a part of the painting. Because darkness is in all of us. The dark side is when you let it control you. But as we've seen with Yoda in, I believe this was Sacrifice? No, I think it was Destiny. Is the episode of TCW. Yoda tried for a little while to deny that any darkness existed in him. In the Wellspring of Life.
Yeah.
With that shadow version of him. And we saw how well that went. Only when he acknowledged that darkness was part of him, and that to turn to the light, again, this is something that's been emphasized a lot in Star Wars recently, is a choice that you have to make again and again. It's not once and you're done. You have to make the decision, and you have to keep making the decision. And what Lola's doing here is reaffirming to herself that she does not need to be perfect. She just needs to choose the light.
Yeah, she just needs to, yeah. And I mean, that. What's more Star Wars than that?
It's incredibly Star Wars.
Just make the choice. The power of personal choices. The power of her having the hope and the belief in herself to be able to say, what happened in the past happened, but now here I am. And I'm gonna do what needs to be done to put down my old master. And in doing so, she's putting down her old demons. And she's embracing that and expunging that past part of herself.
To quote Master and Apprentice, and this quote has been splattered all across the internet because of how genius it is, Claudia Gray is, again, a genius. We've talked about that many times on the show. This line is one of my favorite lines in Star Wars. I don't turn towards the light because it means someday I'll win some sort of cosmic game. I turn toward it because it's the light. I don't do this for any personal benefit for myself. I do this because it's the fucking right thing to do. And that's the choice.
Yeah. I think ultimately that's... Sorry, go ahead.
And that's the choice Lola makes here.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, ultimately this is just about doing what's right at no matter at what stage, better late than never.
Yeah.
You could say.
And yeah, I do love, I gotta say, again, visually, this short was great. The cape billowing in the wind of the master Kotu, I think was the name, right? Kotu? But anyway.
Yeah. I think I don't have it in my
notes.
It's
fine. It's fine. I can look at it. Kotu.
Kotu. Yeah, there we go. I mean, visually, this was an extremely interesting episode. I didn't love it, to be honest. It wasn't my favorite, to be personally, I think. But I have to commend. Which studio made this episode? Do you know off the top of your head?
El Guiri, I believe it's called. El Guiri.
I have to commend them. Because, again, we've never seen anything, even more so than Ao's song, we have never seen anything like this. I think I was blown away by how non-representative it felt at times. I thought they did a beautiful job of bringing something completely different to life.
Yeah, El Guiri Studio.
And I just didn't really enjoy the whole paint splatter thing, the shtick of how it worked out. It just wasn't really, I don't know, it just wasn't for me. But again,
that's
yeah,
really interesting.
I mean shout out to
a lot of people, this is their favorite episode of this season.
Wow, interesting.
Not mine personally, but
it wouldn't be mine necessarily.
But it's still great. I still love it. That shot of Lola getting onto her, like jumping off that cliff onto her, jumping onto the wheel bike off that cliff was so incredibly well composed. E3 is a badass. Goddamn. That dude was ready to shoot a motherfucker's head off. And they did crazy stuff. And darkness are part of the painting, part of me, as I said earlier. I don't know if you realized, you saw this. Lola defeats Kotu in a move I like to call the Dave Filoni. Because Dave has included this in so many things. Which is like the slice. And then you pause, and then you have the villain realize what's happened, and then you show the end.
Oh, gosh, yeah. This is such a Filoni move that the first thing that comes to mind for me is when he fakes this move out, which is with Sabine in season 3 of Rebels.
Oh,
that is the same. Yeah. You're absolutely right. That is the signature.
I think of Maul.
Let's be real. Filoni by no means invented this.
I think of Maul. I think of the Inquisitor at the end of part 6 of Tales of the Jedi. I think of Marek in Ahsoka.
He didn't invent it, but he may have...
He uses it a lot.
He's prolific. It's certainly the most prolific use of any director I can think of, that's for sure.
To me, it is as native to Dave Filoni as Wolves and Lord of the Rings references.
Fair enough.
Again, I'm not saying that Dave had any part in this. I'm just saying like it was a nice homage, if it was an homage at all. If not, it was just cool to see. I don't think I'll get tired of that anytime soon. It's so satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely. One other detail that I liked of this was the dark streaks emanating out from Lola at the beginning as she was having a nightmare. I think that kind of, that's what I'm talking about when I say the paint. It's both in the story and also representative of what's happening. You have her painting, but then you also have the paint painting. You have the room painting itself. And maybe that's another way of representing the force. In a sense, how we see that darkness coming from her when she's grappling with this. And then when Kotu comes in, you know, obviously everything changes. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's really something. Sith is great. I quite like it. Do you want to go to Journey to the Dark Head?
Journey to the Dark Head. This is an interesting
one.
I have some feelings.
This with my parents, and I were looking for something to watch like a month ago, and we watched this actually, weirdly enough. So I tried to pretend like I didn't see it like a month ago.
How to go over with the folks, the non-Star Wars nuts?
I think that they appreciated it for what it was, maybe if they didn't like it. But I remember sitting there, I'm like, because it was the second time I watched it. I hadn't watched it since release day. And I'm like, damn, I forgot how good this was. And I remember watching this a few days ago for IG, and I'm like, yeah, this is really good. I don't know where my ranking of visions is. I'm going to try and pull it up. I'm pretty sure this is in my top 5 vision stories. And it comfortably lands there among things like the Pit, which we'll get to next episode, the Twins, which we'll cover in the future, and the Ninth Jedi, which we'll cover in the future. This is peak Visions for me.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed the story. It certainly wasn't mind-blowing for me. I didn't really love the more anime style of dialogue or voice acting that much. That's just not really my thing, and I found it a bit grating at times. But oh my gosh, the duel scenes, the lightsaber duels in here. Are you kidding me?
They were just
absolutely
so good.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Dead gorgeous. Unbelievable.
I located in my ranking, I have Journey to Darkhead at number 3 behind the Twins and the Pit. I might put Ninth Jedi above it. I need to rewatch it to be sure, which is at number 4 right now. But even either way, at lowest it's 4, at highest it's 3. There's just, first of all, one of the things I most love about this is that it is... is that line, this was the moment that it got me, which is that there's a war going on and the Sith are winning it, which places this one the most established in the timeline that it, like, of any of these four, or it could possibly be. Because in canon we haven't seen this war, but you bet as hell in Legends we've seen this war. And in canon, I'm hoping we see this war
many times over.
Yeah.
Because, of course,
the Sith are winning it now, but we know they eventually lose. The Jedi Order presumes they're destroyed, but one remains. One remains. A lowly miner from the planet of Patros named Dessel, who calls himself Darth Bane. And, of course, Bane creates the Rule of Two. Always two there are, no more, no less. One to seek, one to harness the power, and one to crave it. Master and apprentice. But this is, of course, before that. Star Wars, please give us more Jedi Sith War stories. Come on. I just want lightsaber action.
Full-scale Jedi Sith War in canon would be insane.
I'd love it so much. Think. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely insane.
Sarpishan's Bane trilogy was so good. I just want it in canon. Please, Lucasfilm, please.
I know. I would love if they canons or something brought like that style of Sith Jedi War. Whew. I don't even know if you can really live up to level of intensity that it reached in Legends. I don't know if you can say
I think you could,
that's doable, but I sure as hell would like them to try.
But yes, I want stories. The High Republic is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. Seeing the Jedi at their peak fighting new and interesting threats is fantastic. But what's the better? There's only one thing better than the Jedi at their peak. The Jedi in the peak.
The Sith at their peak.
It's the Jedi and at their peak, and the Sith at their peak, and just going at it.
Yeah.
And
there
that's
you go.
What I want. That is Absolutely. What I want so badly. it's that this guy Beacon, however you want to say Beacon, however you want to say the name. He is one Sith.
Was Bai-Chan maybe in there? Did they say Bai-Chan?
I don't remember. Bai-Chan. Whatever. Sure. Bai-Chan. At the end of the day, he doesn't really matter the Sith. He's one of many Sith Lords. He had this particular obsession with Tol and Tol with him for reasons we don't entirely understand. But that's the other thing I really like about this short, is that I think they build the chemistry between Ara and Tol, who initially very much don't like each other, but gain a respect for each other once they realize that they're each possessing something that the other can learn from, even though one has the Force and one doesn't.
Yeah.
The great energy of that, I also really, and I think that this is something Dave talked about a lot because he wanted to make this important in his own work. But of course, it's also obviously this is a product of our heteronormative society, but it is also a male-female friendship that is not romantic in any way.
Yeah. Which I appreciate.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I think that's...
I appreciate that.
And I think that's
I hate all these... Sorry. Maybe off topic, but yeah, I hate all these... these alpha bro podcasters, or this... I guess it's nothing new, but this narrative that men and women can't be friends.
Oh yeah, no, that's ridiculous. Bullshit.
Absolutely, it's absolutely ridiculous, and I hate
obviously
it.
Obviously Dave didn't put it front and center with Ezra and Sabine and Star Wars Rebels, and that's not just me interpreting it that way. That's him who said it that way. But it's, I thought their relationship and building that up really, really interesting. Here's one of the things that I like about all four of these, and I think Visions does a lot of this, because very, very much, good friend of the show, Alden Diaz, asked Rian Johnson about this in his interview with him a few years ago, where if you get a Star Wars project, it's safe to assume, like it's a safe to assume idea, that it could be the only one you get. It could be the only shot you get to make a Star Wars.
Yeah.
You gotta make, there are a lot of people who work with the mindset, and I completely understand this, that they're going to make the Star Wars that they wanted to make if they never got to make Star Wars ever again.
Yeah.
And
up until a few years ago, this amount of Star Wars is just simply unprecedented.
Yeah. And my point with this one was because there's a different why question, in my opinion, that is asked with each of these shorts. There is the Iwas song is why the Jedi? Why do they mean so much to people?
Yeah.
The Sith is why the dark side?
Okay.
The Sith is why the light?
Yeah.
Sorry, no, the Sith is why the light?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Screecher's Reach, which we'll get to, is why the dark side?
Yeah.
This is why Star Wars.
Why Star Wars? Why the bat? Why the dance?
Why specifically?
Why the constant tug of
why
war?
Why specifically? If we know this fight is going to go on until the end of time, then why do we bother fighting? Which is a really great. I think it addresses this really eloquently, and I think it really does a great job with this. Of course, going back to Sith with that idea, that reveal of the statues have both light and dark in them, that's perfect. There's a lot of this.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of this arc that there's a lot of this short that reminds me of, and I'm sorry for bringing this up, but you know I gotta Mortis.
Yeah, absolutely. The themes
you took
not just light.
Go ahead.
The themes of not just light and dark, but of the cyclical nature of this and the prophecies, the idea that you can't have one without the other. I think you're absolutely right. And to go deeper, that Mortis allegory, I think when we see Tool overcome his anger and defeat Bichon, that's like not rejecting the dark so much as it is, like you said, embracing the balance and embracing the tug of war and realizing, coming to terms with it, I guess, you, as opposed to where he's tormented in the beginning by the thought that there could be dark in him, by the thought that there's dark out there, by the fact that he tapped into it and might have to tap into it again. That's something that's extremely scary to him.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, with the Mortis stuff, with those comparisons, looking at the galactic consequences, the son brutally murdered his sister, who is the avatar of the light.
Yeah.
And what happened? It got dark on the planet. Like, Mortis fell into darkness for a while. And then the father died. So that means the balance supposedly died. But then, of course, it ends with the death of the son.
Yeah.
And I do not think that the deaths of any of these three had actually any material impact on the galaxy.
I mean, that just brings up the question of what do you think of these Force gods to begin with? And
I don't think they're gods. Or are they descriptive? I don't think they're gods. That's the other thing. I don't think they're gods. My point is that I think that making these designations of pure light, pure dark, all that kind of stuff, like, there are representations of that. And other than them, there is no pure light and pure dark. Because everyone's got a little bit of both in them. With the exception, maybe, of the Emperor, who I've always seen as Star Wars' dark side personified. But then again, there are Sheev Demption folks who...
Yeah. But it makes sense that the Mortis gods would die right before the ascendancy of the Emperor. Because if you think of the Force as a mythology, he is the ultimate... He wants to perpetrate the ultimate form of blasphemy. He wants to be the one. He wants the Force to run through him. And him alone, and he wants to achieve immortality.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wants to basically become... He wants to become the father, or the son, in a certain way, you could
absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely, and that in Rise, when he's zapping the dyad's power, he said, I don't know if you realize, you remember this, and I think it's a part of The Rise of Skywalker that I think is under-explained, but I think is really important to that film's messaging, and I wish it got highlighted a little bit more. But what was Palpatine's ultimate plan in The Rise of Skywalker?
Just blow up a bunch of shit?
Blow all the planets up that were resisting him. He was willing to destroy the galaxy to rule it.
His whole thing, ever since Operation Cinder, his whole thing is if I can't have it, no one should.
I might. Anyway, you know? Sorry.
Even the Force. And that's, I think, symbolic also in the death of the Mortis gods.
Yeah.
And then, of course, to tie it back to Sith, that's why you don't destroy the heads, obviously.
No, yeah, and I love that. I love the vision that comes true with Aura being the one standing in the middle. That is beautiful storytelling right there. It is so great. It is so well done. I was thinking about, because the Jedi took this so seriously, because the Jedi and the Council set toll on this mission, I was thinking about, and because the prophecy turned out maybe to be misread a little bit, or misinterpreted, that maybe in the future after this, the Council would be more wary of certain visions or prophecies that their students have, going forward thousands of years to when a young man named Sifo Dyas has these visions of war, bringing war to the galaxy, and that the galaxy would need an army. I'm not saying that this is exactly why the Jedi Council ignored Sifo Dyas. I'm saying that you could say that maybe this set in like an idea among the Jedi, or maybe this at least helped an idea among the Jedi of, hey, maybe we should just ignore these visions, which is something that I love. Yeah, and of course we have that line at the end where Aura learns the final lesson. No matter what we do, it won't end. There's no way to stop this war. And even if we did, it doesn't matter. Another would just arrive. And the idea, that's not the point. We fight for the light to keep the eradication of the darker light is not possible. And we know this. Our goal is never eradication. Our goal is simply to keep it in check.
Yeah, I think you're I agree. I think as well that it doesn't necessarily matter, to tie it back to Sith as well, it doesn't necessarily matter what the outcome is or whether you can win. There is something to fighting the good fight and doing the right thing. That is its own reward.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think as well. And that's maybe what Tool figures out in this episode a little bit.
All I'll say to wrap up this, and if you want to move on after this, absolutely we will, is that Bai-Chan, or however we're going to say it, being Space Dr. Octopus is a really cool idea, and I want to see that more in Star Wars.
Yeah, I think overall, I think thematically this one was really interesting. I love some of the execution, but visually, it was spectacular. Absolutely spectacular.
No doubt about it. This is my second favorite of the season, third favorite, maybe fourth overall of all the Vision stuff. I love this short dearly. It hits a lot of stuff. It's a lot of the right notes for me with Star Wars thematically. Now, Screecher's Reach. I know friend of the show Alex Damon's favorite story of season 2.
Very, it's very
And I can see why.
What about the timing of this one?
The timing of this one.
What do you think the timing is?
It says here on Wikipedia that it must take place by 32 BBY, which is the Battle of Naboo. And I agree with this. I think this probably takes place probably anywhere from 100 to 800 years, maybe 200 to 900 years before the Battle of Yavin. I think this is squarely entrenched in the rule of two. I have a theory, actually, to who the Sith Mother actually is and who Dahl might become, and I have a headcanon with that. But that doesn't need to be true. I do think, though, that regardless if that's true or not, this takes place during the Rule of Two era Sith. It has that vibe.
Yeah, I think that this, to me, this felt completely parallel. I didn't really, thinking about especially the way the Sith were portrayed in this, it felt like whether this took place during the Rule of Two, before the Rule of Two, it felt irrelevant because of the art style, because I felt so transported by the art style. I just felt like, oh, this is a reflection of Star Wars. Maybe this isn't even, like a lot of visions, maybe we can consider this. Maybe this isn't the stars. These are the stars being reflected on the surface of a still puddle on a clear night, yeah. You know? That kind of thing. But where do you want to start with this episode? Because I think there's I think there's a lot here, potentially, to talk about.
Almost immediately what I love is that we instantaneously get that this is a hero's journey story. This is a monomythical story. This is following Candelian ideas. That Dahl looking off into the stars, wanting something better. We've seen this film before.
Yeah, seen this before.
Or at least we think we have.
Yeah. This is the inverse of it.
That's what I love, and that's what we'll get to, which is that we think we've seen this story before, but we really haven't.
Yeah. Luke Skywalker, he gets to go off into the stars and have an adventure. At the beginning, he's in a similar position. Dahl is in a similar position to Luke. She's in a similar position to Rey. She's in a similar position to Anakin. But her story is closer to Anakin's, which is... What happens when you can't bring your friends or find your family when you go off into the stars? What if the only way to do it is something more painful or more difficult?
But even then, you know? I think it's different than Anakin, because Anakin, at least, is a Jedi for quite a while.
It's very different, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, yeah, sure.
Anakin is the story of a hero's fall.
I'm talking about episode one.
Yeah.
I'm talking about episode one.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Like, between the time before he exits Tatooine.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
The analogous moment.
I was going to say that Anakin's a hero's fall. This is not a hero's fall for me. This is a villain's journey.
I mean, besides leaving her friends behind, I don't even know what we could say puts her on that arc, besides the fact that it is the Sith. But again, the Sith are portrayed so differently here that I'm not entirely convinced that this is about, this is the creation of a villain. That's not really how I interpreted it. But tell us more about what you thought. I'm curious to hear.
The big thing for me
is
that
this was a very thought-provoking episode.
Is that ghost. Like, Dahl's friends, they're very nice. Yeah. They're cool. Honestly, couldn't care less about them. No offense.
Yeah.
getting into this cave... There are all these mythologized stories about this stuff. And of course, Star Wars loves to play around with the power of myth and all that kind of stuff. That's why we love it. There were all these stories about what this ghost could do with the mind and, like, all that kind of stuff and how scary she was. And I think she was a former Sith. But really? I think the key word there is former. Like, I don't think she was a Sith anymore. I think if I had to guess what happened, to me this feels like what happened. The Sith Mother, who, by the way, is voiced by Angelica Houston, who appeared actually very recently in the second episode of season 3 of Star Wars The Bad Batch. I think that the Screecher, the ghost, I think that was her former master. Again, this is my interpretation of the story. My interpretation of the story is that she drove her former master crazy and, like, just dropped her in that cave and would test students, would test potential prospects like this.
That's interesting. Yeah, when you really see this ghost without all the smoke and the mirrors when she's under that rock, this is someone who, it's unsettling. It's about as unsettled as I've ever been watching Star Wars, to be honest with you. I thought that seeing her in clearly an incredible amount of pain.
Yeah, because here's the thing.
You know, creature.
And what's great is it makes sense.
What's great is it
makes sense in hindsight, but also you put the Jedi story on it the first time before you realize. You think, oh, Dahl slayed the Sith. That's a heroic moment for her. The Jedi are the enemies of the Sith. They took down the dark side. Great. She wasn't doing anything. She was just being spooky in that cave. She wasn't bothering anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dahl took an innocent life. That's what she did. She took an innocent life. Not innocent life.
Can you really say innocent when she was in danger, though? Like, her life was in danger.
Yes, I'm not saying...
I don't know if I would say innocent, but...
I'm not saying that the Screecher is completely innocent, but also, you gotta remember that Dahl chose to go to the cave, and she chose to go to the cave because the amulet guided her.
Yeah, that's true. I mean... Ultimately, she could not have foreseen what would have happened, but maybe
but
it's
the
same as Luke, you know, dismembering. The Sith Mother did. Yeah. She dulled it.
Yeah, no, but I'm trying to say, I think that's the point.
Oh, I see.
The point is that, look, am I saying that Dahl is a horrible human being just by that one thing? No, of course not. But I do think that the Sith Mother can and does use this very cleverly. Look, you were in danger. You just had to protect yourself. She was attacking you. What were you gonna do?
I don't know about that, because I don't think that taking a life is necessarily the magic key to joining the Sith. That if you just trick someone into killing the ghost,
I'm not saying that you do that and they'll automatically become a Sith. I'm saying that once you start justifying that, you know,
what would you have had Dahl do in that situation? Let me ask you that. She didn't really have much of a choice.
No,
she was acting on instinct. She was panicking when she pulled down that rock. And when she struck her.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she gave in to her fear and her anger when she did. But ultimately...
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm not saying
I don't see how that's such an indictment of her.
I'm not saying that happened, so Dahl must be Sith. The only reason I think that Dahl must be Sith is because she joined them. I think that moment in and of itself is not a Sith thing to do. I think it can't be.
Then we don't need to talk about it like it is.
No, I'm saying I think it can be.
Analyze that as the inflection point. Oh, sure, it can be. I think the thing that really makes it maybe a Sith moment, or the moment is the moment that comes after it, when Dahl says, I can't remember exactly what she says, but basically, when her friends ask what happened, she said, "I was strong," in reference to killing the Sith ghost.
Yeah.
That's, I think, if we want to go there, that's what would make it a Sith moment, when we see her buying in, because of the amulet, she's all of a sudden buying into what we know of the rhetoric of the Sith. As Obi-Wan put it with Maul, or rather, yeah, the rhetoric of the dark side, which is the power to control, the power to take life, and the power to inflict pain. That's strength, and she was strong.
By the way, I'm not saying that, just to clarify about the doll killing that woman, I'm not saying that is a dark side. Here's the thing. I don't think that becomes a dark side act until Dahl joins the Sith. And then the Sith Mother can use that to manipulate her. oh, yeah. You did that, and that was in self-defense. Why do you do this? Person's a danger to us. It's the right thing to do. Surely you can justify that.
Yeah. I think it's more about the strength aspect of it, of Dahl being like, this is how I become stronger and independent within myself. And then obviously her wanting that independence so badly that she leaves her friends for what she hopes is a better life. It probably won't be, since she's signing up for pretty gnarly existence if she's going to become a Sith. But that's what
the dark side does. It makes you feel like you have no other options.
Yeah.
And of course, that's another Star Wars lesson. We always have a choice. And Dahl gives in to her fear.
She has her choice and she makes her choice. I think it could also be a matter of just, she knows what she wants. And ultimately, after she has that, it seems like how she feels it's almost a liberating act of taking the life of this Sith ghost. Being able to her understanding of her strength, not just literal strength, but when she says, I was strong in that moment, that's such a laden word. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
When we see that, that's when we see her decide to, by striking out on her own. Not on her own, but by going with the Sith.
It's not the killing itself.
What she's willing to do to get what she wants.
But no, I agree with you. It's a haunting short, and I think it's really well done. I think, here's my pitch for when it is. And this is just my, idea. We don't know anything about this, and I actually wrote a different idea in my script, and then when we were talking about it, I came up with another idea. So we don't know who this Sith mother is. But I have a name for her. My Sith name for her is Darth Cognis.
And what why is that?
Or rather, should I say, a Darth Cognis equivalent. I think this would be interesting if... Because Cognis was in Legends, was the apprentice of Darth Zanna. Who herself was, of course, the apprentice of Darth Bane. And I think it would be interesting, because, of course, we don't know much about Bane. We know that Bane existed in canon. He survived the Jedi-Sith Wars and created the Rule of Two. That's all we know. His apprentice doesn't have to be Zanna. I think it'd be great if it is. But if Zahn doesn't matter, then nothing else about the Rule of Two line matters, except for it somehow has to get to Plagueis and then Sidious. But one of the things that Darth Zanna was known for in Legends was her masterful casting of Sith spells and illusions, and invading people's minds and making them think all crazy stuff. Does that sound like anybody to you in this short?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I think that Darth Zanna is the Screecher. I'm just saying I think it'd be really cool if Darth Zanna was the Screecher.
That would be a cool title,
I think so that would make that the Sith Mother... Again, Darth Cognis in Legends was as a Brock. Obviously, changes would have to be made. I don't really care about that. But the idea that Master's master would be Bane. Again, it's my canon brain doing this, but God, if I don't love that idea.
It is pretty great. Do you have anything else for this episode?
I'll just say also just the idea that I love that the Sith Mother is beautiful and seemingly on the outside very non-threatening, but with an extremely sinister motive on the inside. The dark side doesn't always...
Well, this is a very different...
The dark side doesn't always come.
This is a very different vision of the Sith. Yeah. This also is just a different portrayal and vision, no pun intended, of what the Sith could be, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is why the dark side. This is a story about why people choose the dark side. This is how the story about how people are manipulated to choose the dark side of the Force. All right, I think that's going to be it for this episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy. Next week, we are going to be looking at the three Dark Times era shorts we have here. The Pit, The Bandits of Golok, and In the Stars. The week after, we will be beginning Star Wars in a Galaxy episode. We will be beginning Star Wars in a Galaxy Season 17, The Young Jedi Adventures, with special guest at Isabella Crafts on Twitter. Great person in the Star Wars fan base. Great cosplayer. I'm very excited to talk with them about Young Jedi Adventures. They're one of the few people I know who is involved and who knows about Young Jedi Adventures and has watched this stuff. Jacob and I are very excited to have them on.
Absolutely.
And yeah, in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, anywhere at In a Galaxy Pod. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your podcasts. You can follow me. My link tree is linktr.ee/_OGFan327. And I think if that's it, all there's left to say is may the Force be with you. Always.
Always.